It brings back those memories of El Monte.
A swinging tune makes a lovely afternoon. So keep listening exclusively, WKEE.
Só tenho medo da falseta, mas adoro a Julieta como adoro.
The People Pleaser, Old Uncle Don, the Big Round Man, Little Round Records. Lots of fun for you this morning and direct line weather right now. With
and then came the announcement over the loudspeaker. Would those having relatives or friends on flight number 1203 please report to the chapel across the street?
Hot dog, here's a dedication.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
It is the Raleigh James Show, Friday Night Trivia, and have I got a trivia question for you. Name someone who has never actually worked for a radio station, never even heard on a highly rated mainstream radio station, and yet is to this day the most popular disc jockey in a major market. Bet you can't do it. Well, if you're in Philadelphia, you can, and you're about to meet him. He's Jerry Blabbitt.
Oh, boy. It's the Raleigh James Show.
Okay, I'll admit it. One of my great frustrations is that I can't get over a million members for OIDA. Now, I know with 162,000 members currently, that sounds a little far-fetched, but the reality is there are millions of drivers on the road. Doesn't matter whether you're an independent owner-operator, whether you're a company driver, where you're driving, what you're driving. If you're holding a CDL and that's the way you're making a living, OIDA is the one group and the only group that represents your interests in Congress and with the government. With 162,000 members, that's pretty impressive. You get that up to over a million, you see the kind of clout that cannot be ignored. And my frustration is that there are people on the road who are saying, well, you know, maybe it's not for me, or maybe they don't represent my interests, or you name it, someone's come up with it. And the bottom line is, if you're a commercial driver, they absolutely are the only organization constantly representing you. Now, on top of that, it's $25 for your first year dues. There's nobody who can't afford that. It's 6.8 cents a day. And you'll get that back in discounts alone or in information, which is truly priceless. Got a lease, need somebody to read it? They're there. Stuck in the middle of nowhere with a problem? They're there. So in terms of personal benefits, it's all there. But in terms of increasing the clout of the only voice lobbying for you, the only way to do that is by increasing the membership roles of OIDA. And that's one driver at a time. Get that up to over a million. It really is the voice that can't be ignored. Please join OIDA. It's 800-444-5791. That's 800-444-5791. Give them a call. Say Raleigh James. Pay $25. That's it. Spouse a co-driver? That's just an additional $10. And it's another member for OIDA. If you want to do it online, OOIDA.com. OOIDA.com. You'll see a link that says join or renew. If you click on that, a form's going to pop up and you fill it out. Just put Raleigh James in the promo code and $25 in the amount, and they'll accept that. And again, if your spouse is a co-driver, well, just fill that out online too. However you do it, please join OIDA. It makes a difference for you and everybody else on the road. Thanks.
It's about to happen. That obscure song only you remember is going to be played on the radio. Friday Night Trivia on the Raleigh James Show.
But if you're a Jerry Blabbitt fan, then this is not obscure at all. It's General Fair. And yes, he is the real thing. He's Jerry Blabbitt. Welcome to the Raleigh James Show.
Raleigh James, you are the best thing that has ever happened to radio. You keep the airways clean. You keep them alive. And when I hear Tina Britt doing the real thing. I want your audience to know that you, my darling, are the real thing.
Well, and I do appreciate that, but I can't hold a candle to your career in Philadelphia, which is still one of the most perplexing things when you think about it, because everybody always says you got to work for a major market station and you got to have all this promotion behind you and on and on. And you have never worked for a mainstream Philadelphia radio station that was highly rated, have you?
Well, you know why I've never done that? Because they would try to condense me, try to keep me away from being me, and then I would not be the Geeter. And you got to understand, when you listen to radio, Raleigh, and that's the wonderful thing about you, you discovered music. Today, you discovered diddly swat. Yeah. The problem is that radio stations will not allow their personalities to be personalities. In the early days of radio, Jocko, Wolfman, Alan Freed, Cats Around the Country, Hound Dog, Hunter Hancock, Dr. Jive, they were as important to the audience with their rap and their whole persona as the music was. And they introduced music. They created music. And that's the difference between yesterday and today. And, you know, by the grace of God, Raleigh, you know it ain't been easy.
No, no. And the dues you've paid are exactly what most people are unwilling to do. Now, I haven't mentioned yet that you certainly were a highly rated television personality, but I want to go back to the beginning, which sort of winds up with television. From what I know, your first introduction was the Bob Horn Show.
Exactly. At the age of 13, I snuck in the bandstand at that time. And, you know, in those days when you were a kid growing up in the neighborhood, bandstand was the only way you could meet girls outside of the neighborhood. So, you know, if you were a spiffy dancer, you went up the bandstand and tried to score.
So it was the girls, not the music.
It was the girls, but, you know, everybody in South Philly, when I was a kid growing up, you got to understand, music was a part of the neighborhood. My aunts, my uncles, in those days in the neighborhood, everybody had their door open during the warm weather, and there was music coming out of all of the homes. And I learned how to jitterbug from watching my aunts and my uncles jitterbug when they were in the parlor. I mean, they put up the rug and they'd be jitterbugging to all that stuff. So I, by the grace of God, won all of the dance contests, went up the bandstand, and Bob Horn, after realizing that I had snuck in, you know, said to me, "Are you 14? And I didn't lie. I said, "No." He said, "Well, you got to be 14. He said, "But I'll tell you what, you've won two dance contests, so you can stay. You'll become the head of the committee." And that's the way it began.
Which is great. And, of course, I'm glad you're mentioning Bob Horn, because a lot of people think that Dick Clark originated bandstand. And, of course, he did not. Bob Horn did. And that's the origins of the show, which, of course, in the early days, because we're talking about a show that goes back to 1952, and here you are in 53 and stuff, you're dancing on it. This is pre-rock and roll.
Well, it's interesting, because when I was the head of the committee, Bob Horn had a thing on Mondays called Rate the Record. And I'll tell you what I did back then as a kid. You know, as like you, your ear is rhythm and blues. You have a wonderful feel for that.
Mm-hmm.
And in those days, you remember the white artist would be covering all of the black artists.
Mm-hmm.
Shaboom, as you know, by the Chords, was covered, as you know, by the Crew Cuts, okay? And Little Darlin', as you know, was also covered, if you remember back then, the original version by the Gladiolas. And mm-hmm. I would pick five or six different records that would go on Rate the Record. And I would always pick the original version. And Bob was probably the first white disc jockey in America on a television show playing the original version of songs instead of Pat Boone doing it. Ain't It a Shame? It was Fats Domino, as you remember. So it was very important back then. And you got to understand, Raleigh, in those days, TV was not exposing the black artists back then.
Oh, of course not. Of course not. And you know, just the idea of playing this race music, this Harlem Hit Parade, I'm sure under normal circumstances would have driven the town wild. But the interesting thing about this is an after-school show. This worked. There weren't complaints.
Well, you know, it's funny because of the fact that Horn really was ahead of his time. And here's a very interesting fact also for your audience, which you know. When Dick Clark took over Bandstand, the only market the bandstand was not seen was the Washington-Baltimore area. That's when Buddy Dean, who started out with Bob Horn in those early 50s, was so strong locally that they've never aired Bandstand in Baltimore, Washington. It was the Buddy Dean Show, another guy who played black music back then.
Well, yes, and that's the interesting part, because, of course, Buddy later wound up losing the show in the civil rights movement of the 60s because, the blacks and the whites, in terms of the parents, didn't want them together and all those things. But, yes, Buddy Dean, of course, featured in Hairspray. And, of course, Milt Grant in D.C. and Gene Loving in Norfolk. You know, Bob Horn started this, but there were personalities like this up and down the East Coast. And here comes Dick Clark, who, for one thing, wanted to claim he originated it, but for another thing, it got whiter overnight.
Well, I got to tell you a great story, which I'll share with you and your audience, and I think you know this. Bob lost the show in 1956. What had happened, he had gotten involved, he drank a little too much, and he got involved with a drunk driving situation where he was arrested. He had just signed a contract with Triangle, which was, as you know, the owner of WFIL Radio and Television, Daily News, and the Inquirer. And the Inquirer was doing this whole drunken driving thing back in 56. Horn had just signed a contract with Triangle for Bandstand, because there was a Bandstand radio show in the morning, and then there was the TV show in the evening. So management took Bob off Bandstand in the afternoon and said, look, we want to wait till this sort of dies down, all of the heat. Well, what happened, they then came back to him a couple of weeks later, and they put Tony Mamarella, who was his producer, in the interim. And they came back and they said, look, what we're going to do, we're going to honor the contract, we're going to give you the same amount of money, but you're only going to do Bandstand radio, not Bandstand TV. What happened here, Bob Horn balked and said, look, you know, I've got a brand new contract. Now, as you know, he went to sue them, and a very famous lawyer by the name of Louis Lipschitz in Philadelphia was the attorney that represented him. But all of a sudden, the Inquirer and the Daily News are now creating a vice ring back in 1956 about air personalities and disc jockeys being involved with a place called the Wharton Estate, millionaires hiring call girls, and they start to mention names. Disc jockeys, Steve Allison, this guy, that guy. Now, as you know, when I did a teenage show, there is a moral clause in the contract. Sure. Horn's contract had a morals clause. He was accused of statutory rape, which he beat, but that was the end of the lawsuit. Bob Horn became a broken man. I accompanied him to Houston, Texas, where he died.
Yeah.
In the interim, they bring Dick Clark in. All of a sudden, what I do is I lead a revolt with all of the dancers.
Mm-hmm.
And I am picketing Bandstand. We want Bob Horn back. No kids are going into that studio while the pickets are up. Dick Clark comes out at that time with George Kohler, who was the general manager, and says, look, you were the head of the committee. You got $15 a week. We'll pay you $30 a week. We want you to be the head of the new committee with Dick Clark. I said, I'm not interested in the money. I think it's unfair that you took him off the air, la-di-da-di-da-di-da-di-da. Next thing that happens, 20 minutes later, the cops come, I get pinched.
Yeah.
They take me to the police station, the pickets come down, all those kids that danced with Bob Horn and now dancing with Dick Clark.
Yeah, no, it's true. Now, of course, I'm a conspiratorialist, so I take this one step further, and you can tell me if you think I'm wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, of course, Triangle Publications was also TV Guide.
Yes.
And the interesting thing about this, we mentioned there's Bob Horn and there's Milt Grant and Buddy Dean and Gene Lovin and everybody else, and ABC is eyeing at this point doing a national dance show. Now, they can't do it in New York because of unions. They're looking at places. Philadelphia's close, for one thing. They have this sweetheart relationship with Triangle because of TV Guide, but here's this host, this middle-aged, almost used car salesman, huckster in their eyes, and they don't want that. They'd like some young, dapper guy. Well, gee, here's Bob Horn, who likes, old wine and young girls, and there is a morals turpitude clause, and, well, what if he was out when the show went national?
Let me say something. You just hit it right on the head, because at that time, Roger Clip, who was general manager and president of Triangle, the TV radio, and pitched the show to a guy by the name of Ali Trace, who at that time was head of ABC Programming Network. They loved the idea, but they said to Roger Clip, the host, Bob Horn, is not acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
And you must understand, at that time, it was Pat Boone with the White Bucks. It was that young-looking, clean, refreshing look that was the image of America.
Sure, sure, laundered, absolutely.
Yep. And I'll tell you a great story about this. When Dick Clark took over the show, at that time there was no payola investigation, and there was nothing wrong with disc jockeys being involved with radio, also being involved with record companies and pressing companies and publishing. There was no law against
that. Right, payola was not illegal until after the hearings, you're
right. Exactly. What happened here is everybody that was a part of the Bob Horn team, and this is another interesting point, Cameo Parkway Records was a spinoff of a record label that actually Bob Horn, Nat Sigel, and Bernie Lowe owned called Sound and Team.
Mm-hmm.
That was no longer. Sound and Team became Cameo Parkway with Bernie Lowe, Cal Mann, and, of course, Dick Clark had a piece of that.
Sure.
Okay? And he also had a piece of Swan Records. But disc jockeys around the country were all having pieces of everything.
Right.
Now, what happens here, this is a wonderful story about how I love my relationship with Dick Clark is even today. He had a group. Nat Sigel had a group called Danny and the Juniors. Dick had the publishing on that. They appear, and I am now the road manager because Nat was with Bob Horn. And I stay with Nat Sigel after I am not dancing, and I go on the road with Danny and the Juniors. We are doing the little theater. Remember the Beech Nut Gum show, 7:30 on ABC?
Sure.
Going way back. I am there for rehearsal. Dick sees me with Danny and the Juniors. He doesn't say anything. I sort of like shy away because I know he knows me. I haven't seen him since the picketing days. They do the show. The next morning, I stay overnight in New York City. I stay at the Forest Hotel, 49th Street, because it's like $9 a night.
Yeah.
I'm going back to Philly, Raleigh. I'm at Pennsylvania Station. I'm getting on the train to go to 30th Street Station. Who's getting on the same train?
Dick Clark. Sure.
He says, Jerry, sit down. Let's talk. I figure, we ride back to Philly. He says, I must tell you something. He said, you know, you could have been the head of this committee. He said, these kids today, Arlene Sullivan, Kenny Rossi, he said, these kids are international stars now. They get fan mail, la-di-da-di-da-di-da. He said, you could have been the head. He said, you would have been a national kid star. I said, Dick, listen, you got to understand something. He said, no, let me finish. He says, everything that Bob had, the guys that were with Bob Horn, Harry Pfeiffer, Ed Barsky, Chips, the record companies, the distributors, the publishing companies, they all rolled over there with me. He says, I understand that if I lose the show, whoever takes that show over, there will not be Dick Clark, it will be somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I got to tell you something, Dick. I really appreciate what you're saying because I think you can understand why I was loyal to Bob Horn. He was like a second father to me. Clark says to me, well, that's why I'm going to sit with you. He says, I appreciate that loyalty. Because I know I will never get that from anybody in this business if I lose Bandstand.
Mm-hmm.
When we got off that train, I said, Richard, you and I will be friends forever. I said, you will have my loyalty. And when I first began, when other disc jockeys were knocking me, Dick Clark would go on TV and said, I just heard the Geeter. He's on a little cockamamie station in Camden, WCAM. I heard him play Sherry by the Four Seasons. I heard him play Frankie Lyman. You should listen to him. And we became dear friends even to this day, Raleigh, because of what I believe as a man. You have to have loyalty for the people that are loyal to you. You have to be respectful. You have to have a passion. And you have to also be a human being, understanding everybody else.
Now, I recognize, of course, that Dick Clark was in the right place at the right time, that he didn't engineer this himself, clearly. So I don't hold that against him. But I do have a lifelong gripe with Dick, and I know he's not well now and all that. But I think that if he were a real man, if he shared your loyalty, that every time he was asked about the origins of Bandstand, he would mention Bob Horn rather than ignoring it, sidestepping it. You know, I remember one interview where they said, what was the first record you played in 52 when it went on? He said, you know, I don't remember that, but when we went national, I played, rather than saying, hey, I didn't create this, a guy named Bob Horn did. It's, you know, maybe it's a dead guy now, and maybe we're saying it's charity, but I'm just a big believer in, you know, in putting things where they belong, and he's never really done that.
Yeah, I agree with that, but I'll tell you another thing. Look at how many disc jockeys today, how many people you've started and helped and turned their back on you, how many people that I've extended friendship and given them the opportunity and they just they want to be you. And what they want to do is they don't even want to acknowledge that somebody helped them.
I think they want to be you. I'm pretty sure nobody wants to be me. But let me ask you. So here you walk out of at a bandstand, and you're still in high school.
Yeah.
Now I know you next wind up on WCAM, but there's about 5 years in the intervening years. What were you doing?
Well, I'm on the road. I'm on the road with Danny and the Juniors. We're working at the Paramount. I'm doing one-nighters with Chuck Berry, Fats Domino, Little Richard. I'm doing this from like around 1958 to around 1960.
Okay.
And I'm also doing dances in South Philadelphia to play for Dixon House, and I form my own little South Philadelphia committee. And I'm shooting crap, you know, street crap, which is
right.
Now casino dice, okay?
Right, right.
In the street with a couple of guys. I always hung with older guys because I always learn from older people. That's the important thing in life. Learn from older people, okay? And I'm shooting craps with a guy by the name of Dom Pinto. He owns a place called the Venus Lounge, and we're shooting dice, and just street talking. The guy says, yeah, I'm trying to do a radio show for my club, the Venus Lounge, and one of the guys, older guy, says, like, sarcastically, well, yeah, get Blabbit. You know, he just came off the road. He knows everything about show business. Now, I was a little cocky kid back then. I mean,
right.
You know, I was 19 going on 20. I said, yeah, I'll do the radio show. Pinto says, what do you know about radio? I said, I'll tell you what. I got the dice in my hand. I got a six, okay? That's my number. I got to make a six. I said, I'll tell you what, if I make the six, he said, you'll never make the six. It's a one out of a million. I said, let me say that. If I make the six, you let me do a radio show. So they all laugh. Never make the six. Boom. Street dice. Boom. Don't make it the first time. Boom. Don't make it the second time. They're looking for me to crap out. Third time, I wrote it. Two threes. They went, whoa. Go do a radio show.
Oh, that's great.
I went up to Camden. At that time, it's city-owned. And you might remember in the early days, they had the Spanish hour, the Italian hour.
Of course.
You remember the way radio used to be.
Yeah, the block programming, a dollar a holler, whatever you could buy.
So I say to the general manager, Bud Hibbs, who's still alive today, I want to buy an hour's worth of time. He says, $120. I say, I'm a big shot. No problem. I go back to Pinto. I say, listen, it's $150 for the hour.
That's great.
Okay?
That's great.
I mean, I got to make at least, you know, I mean, yeah, I got to make
out of
a little
yeah.
money, right?
Yeah, there you go.
Now I figure something else out here. I own the show. Okay? It's coming from the Venus Lounge. He's paying $150. Okay, I got $30 of my kick.
Oh, man. Hang on a minute, Jerry. We're going to leave you right there. Already, he's playing both ends against the middle. Don't you love that? All right. Jerry Blabbit, there's a reason that he's a legend to this day. Great CDs, too. We'll tell you all about that and a lot more coming up on the Raleigh James Show.
The Raleigh James Show. Finally, that useless information in your head is about to pay off. Friday Night Trivia on the Raleigh James Show.
One of the all-time greatest oldies and a signature Jerry Blabbit record, that's for sure. In fact, it's on the Untouchables CD that he has out. And, Bertha Tillman. Jerry played this so much I thought that Bertha was from here, and it turns out she was a West Coast girl. Who knew? All right, a lot of things you don't know about Jerry Blabbit, including, of course, how he became the Geeter with the Heater, and we'll get to that. But we last left him outside the Venus Lounge, already making a deal, and we'll pick that up in moments.
Oh, boy. It's the Raleigh James Show.
If I mention gold, what do you think? Well, these days, most people say high prices, not a good time to buy. But in truth, it's as good a time as any, particularly if you don't own any gold, because gold is the original investment. It'll never be worthless. The entire country can fall apart. The currency can go to hell. Gold will have value. But there is a catch to this. If you don't understand how gold is traded, you may wind up not getting a lot of gold for your money. For one thing, products have a commission rate. It can be as high as 80%. Products have a premium, most of them, and sometimes that's warranted. Other times, maybe not so. And products also have common value. Well, some do. If you buy a coin and there's not a common value, when you go to sell it, what you get is melt value. So you can wind up with not a lot of gold for your money or not a lot of money for your gold. What should you do? I think you should check out Discount Gold and Silver Trading Company. Melody and her staff have been doing this for over a dozen years. They've traded in everything, but they're not middlemen or brokers. They're not pushing any product. They have the integrity to tell you the truth and the knowledge to be able to do it. You can go online right now, discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. Discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. Read the frequently asked questions. Read Melody's notes and the newsletters, and you'll get a handle. And then at that point, well, you may want to give them a call. They'll be happy to answer your questions, and there's never any pressure to invest. That's 1-800-375-4188. 1-800-375-4188. When you're ready to buy, oh, I know you'll come back to Discount Gold and Silver. Nobody beats their commission rate, fastest shipping in the industry, never a minimum order, but above all, one-on-one customer service. Everything's still done by hand. Check it out. Gold can be terrific or disappointing, and the difference is, did you know what you were buying? Find out. DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net. You tell them Raleigh sent you.
Out of her car and on your radio, it's the Empress of the Interstates, Raleigh James.
Well, that may be true, but the king of the dances, undisputed king, is Jerry Blavitt. So we were just embarking upon his radio career. He's already made $30 here with the Venus Lounge. And so I love that, by the way. And you've discovered you own the show.
Well, I own the show, but before I go further, let me tell you something, Raleigh, and I hope that wonderful audience that you have appreciates you as much as I do musically. You are playing music that has been a lifetime. It's a song storybook out of my life, and I do get an opportunity to listen to you occasionally on XM, and I got to tell you something. You are as pure as snow with your soul, and that's been what I've been all of my life, and I just love the fact that you are the only one left, other than maybe what I do here, that has the ability to be open and honest in radio today, and you do it the way you see fit. And that's the way it began, even back at the Venus Lounge. I mean, but I just wanted to say that before I tell you the remainder.
I appreciate that. And, of course, you so well as I do know the price of that. And that's that, of course, you can do it on your terms, but then you'll have to be paid however you earn the money. It's not like signing one of those great contracts where the bucks roll in. And $30 a week sounds pretty good for the Venus Lounge, but this is just the beginning of a lifelong of work.
Listen, it gets better. Let me tell you what I do. I take the hour which I own, and I sell 15 minutes to a guy called Crisconi Oldsmobile, 15 minutes to an old friend in South Philly by the name of Tony Ambezi, who's got a guy called Woody Woodpecker, who's promoting a soft drink called 7-Up. And I take another 25. I got another 15-minute block. I sell the Dale Dance Studio and Fry Hopper's Bread. And I sell these 15-minute blocks for $60. I got four of these blocks going. I'm going away with $240 for the hour. I got another $30 from the Venus Lounge. I've got $270 in my kick. I'm on Broadway back then.
And, of course, the Venus Lounge hasn't even figured this out one iota, I bet.
Well, they're happy because of the fact, my God, all of a sudden I have created a night for them where the place is packed.
Right.
And what I'm doing, whoever's in town, if Chuck's in town, he comes by, Danny and the Juniors come by. It's an interview-type show, sure. So everybody wants to see the stars and all that. But what happens here, there's a snowstorm, completely knocks the city of Philadelphia completely out of whack in 62. Now, I own the time, and the Venus Lounge is closed, but I don't want to lose my $240. So I get some of the kids that are going to the dances with me, and we push my Chevy out of the snow, and I drive up to the studios of WCAM in Camden, New Jersey, and I go on the air at 10 o'clock, and with me are all my old rock and roll records that I used to win dance contests to, artists that give me their records when we were on the road. I'm going back, but all of Frankie Lyman and the Kleptones and Little Richard and Fats Domino, and I start to play this music from a studio. Thank goodness there's an engineer there. And the snow keeps on falling. The phones are lighting up. Kids are surfing the dial. They want to know if they have school the next day. And all of a sudden, I'm on the air because there's no relief until like 2 in the morning. Mm. And the phones, Raleigh, are going crazy. I mean, kids are hearing this music, which you and I considered back then to be oldies, for the first time. But to them, it's brand new. And that's a great point about radio, why they do it wrong. They're afraid to take a chance on playing a song other that's been tested.
Mm-hmm.
Wrong. These kids heard this music for the first time. To their ear, it was new music. And that's how it began. I mean, I get home maybe about 4 o'clock, 4 or 5 in the morning. I go to bed. I mean, it's a snowstorm that closes, cripples the city. I get a call. My wife says to me, "You got to get out of bed." I said, "Well, I just went to bed." She said, "The general manager's on the phone. His name is Bud Hibbs." I said, So I get on the phone. He says, "What did you do last night?" I said, "Well," I said, "nobody came in." I said, "I was on till 2 o'clock in the morning." He says, No. He said, What kind of programming?" I said, "I was playing records that I danced to, oldies." He said, "We've never had a reaction like this in our lives. My mistake was I figured this is something new." I go back to the club, and I try to play rock and roll records in the lounge. They threw me out.
Oh, that's funny.
Pinto says, "Hey, man, look, we're an adult thing. If you can't do a talk show, forget it." So I went up to Bud Hibbs and I said, "Bud, look, I'll make a deal with you. I'm making $270 a week. $30 I'm going to have to discount, okay? So I'm making $240. I will give you every one of my advertisers. Let me go on the air 5 days a week. I don't want any money. I'm just into this. I found a new life." He said, "Okay." And I went on the air, and I was on the air from 10 o'clock every night till 11:30, then followed by a girl by the name of Portia Perry with the Gospel Hour.
Yeah.
She went on to 1:30, then Ricardo Mundiez, who was doing the Latin thing.
Right.
And all of a sudden, these kids discovered, and Dick Clark and Jocko, who was my mentor, and all these other disc jockeys were knocking the heck out of me. All these guys on format radio, knocking the heck, because you got to understand, they were doing record hops with 200-300 kids. My first record hop was at the Ice House with 1,000 kids after being on the air for only 2 weeks playing this music.
Now, see, here's the key, because when you're first saying, "Well, I'm giving them all my advertisers and I'm doing it because I love it," yes, you do love it, but your business sense is telling you that this is the greatest promotion for my record hops available.
Absolutely, and I see that there's something new and different happening in America with these kids. They're not only listening to Connie Francis, who are not only listening to Brian Hyland, but now they're listening to... they're listening to Fats, they're listening to Frankie Lyman, they're listening to the Kleptones, and what I am doing now, I am starting to hear new music that fits in with my whole persona. So I am now playing Party Lights by Claudine Clark, mm-hmm. Oh My Angel by Bertha Tillman. All of a sudden I'm playing a song called You Belong to Me by the Duprees. I am playing new music that fits in with the old. So I am mixing Out in the Cold Again with You Belong to Me. I'm going with Long Tall Sally with Party Lights. I'm going with Little Bitty Pretty One with a song called Twistin' Matilda by Jimmy Soul.
And the channel. Yes.
There you go. And what's happening is that this thing's becoming the biggest thing. I'm taking helicopters.
Well, that was the fascinating part. By the mid-60s, it was Look magazine, I guess it was, that did the feature and showed that in order for you to do your weekend record hops, you had to use a helicopter, otherwise you couldn't have reached them all.
Absolutely. And you know what happened, Raleigh? It was, I love these kids. I mean, when I say these kids at the record hop, it was, what I enjoyed was the fact that kids were coming from all different neighborhoods and experiencing meeting other kids. And if a kid stepped out of line, it was sanctuary. The worst thing you could do if a kid was going to get into a riff-raff fight, you barred him. So what happened is when all his buddies are coming from Fifth and Pike, and he's out in the street because he can't get in,
yeah.
After 3 weeks, you give him another chance, and he became a vigilante. But you had kids from every neighborhood. And I was looked upon as the rebel jock. I mean, the parents at the beginning figured that I was nuts. And all of a sudden, when the kids would go home and I would go to the schools, Hallahan and Bishop Newman back then, or Southeast Catholic, and address the kids about the importance of their role by being honorable, by not getting involved with drugs, not getting involved with this and that and that,
yeah.
I became acceptable. And all of a sudden, I do the Thrill Show with 90,000 people. And I do the stadium shows in Philadelphia. And I am embraced by Walter Annenberg.
Yeah, right. That funny. Yes. Full circle. And, you know, what's fascinating about that, and when you mention Annenberg, of course, we're talking WFIL-TV, among other things, is that, you know, you would have thought by now that the major radio stations in this town would have been beating down your door saying, okay, you can do it your way. We'll put you on at night. Just go for it. But instead, it was television that came a-knocking.
You just hit upon something which is, you're going to love this, okay? I decided that I wanted to produce a pilot. Dick calls me. He was leaving for the coast. They had a going-away party, and guess where it's at? The Venus Lounge.
Oh, I love it.
So he says to me, and that signal, and that was my manager, who was with Bobby, said, look, we're going out to the coast. He says, Lou Klein and Kohler are looking for a show, a dance show. Why don't you go produce a pilot? So what I do is I put up my own money and I get people moonlighting from WCAU. Debbie Miller, who is now a big person out in L.A., she was with the William Morris Agency today. Mm-hmm. Then she was a producer. I get Matt Robinson, who wind up going with Bill Cosby on The Cosby Show. He's one of the writers. And Bob Orlander. They are moonlighting. I produce a pilot. Lou Klein wants to see the pilot. We give Lou Klein the copy of the pilot. He says, I'll get back to you, I'll get back to you. Nothing happens. Debbie Miller calls me up and says, Bruce Bryant at WCAU has seen the pilot. They want to talk with you or management. I send that signal on Harold Lipsius, who at that time was my attorney,
mm-hmm.
Universal Records. Within 1.5 hour of their meeting, they call me and say, you're on Channel 10. I couldn't believe it. I mean, I couldn't believe it.
Right.
And the first show was a half-an-hour show. Again, after 2 weeks, I went out and I sold the show. It went after 2 weeks to an hour show. Mountain Dew bought 15 minutes. Lip Brothers bought 15 minutes. And what happened here is we syndicated it all around the country. Now, this is the interesting thing about radio. When I am on television, I get a call from Joe Conway, Store Broadcasting,
mm-hmm.
WIBG. At that time, it's Joe Niagara, it's Harvey Miller, if you remember, Bob Mitchell, Tom Donahue. IBG is the radio world in Philadelphia, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Conway says, how would you like to be on WIBG? I said, hey, my gosh, that sounds fabulous. He says, okay, we would like you to do nighttime. He said, we got $35,000 budgeted at that time, okay?
Yeah, that's a lot of money, sure.
A lot of money. He says, but we've got one problem.
Mm-hmm.
I says, what's that, Joe? He says, we don't want the geeter with the heater. You will be Jerry Blabbit.
Mm-hmm.
I said, Joe, do you know how much I make a year? He said, no. And this is when the article just came out.
Right.
Okay. I said, I make $125,000 a year being the geeter, the boss with the hot sauce. You want me to come on your station and not be me? You want to format me? He says, well, you know, WIBG. I said, Joe, I love you. Not going to happen. But that only happened, what they offered me, when I became very big in television.
Right, right. And then they thought, we want you, but we don't want right. you doing what it is you do. And I've seen this coast to coast. You know, like when K-Earth in L.A. in the last decade put Huggy Boy on, mm-hmm. You know, who was great with East L.A. and said, but we don't want you playing those East L.A. records. You know, I mean, it's a train wreck every time. And most people are mesmerized with the bucks and take the chance. And, of course, to you, that at that point was a drop in the bucket. So I got to ask, how did you become the geeter with the heater, and what does that mean?
Well, that's very funny because, as I said on CAM, when the phones are ringing, I said to Nat Sigel, called him Bates, I said, Nat, it's crazy. I just can't be. And Jocko said, you've got to come up with a name. He said, I'm the ace from outer space. So I said, yeah, okay. Now, I'm shaving one morning, and I'm saying to myself, this is nuts. I mean, I never experienced this in my life. So I'm shaving. I'm saying, hold it. How do we put this thing together? I'm on the radio all the way up the end of the dial. Don't know what the heck I was doing. Thank goodness there was an engineer. I didn't know how to run a board.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, hold it. An alligator in Florida. Alligator, depending upon the accent, southern, northern, you say alligator, alligator, gator, gator, the gator. Gator, like an alligator. They stay in the mud. They don't bother you. But if you go close to that man, they snatch you up. You think they're sleeping. Here am I, all the way at the end of the dial. When these kids are surfing, as soon as they hear this guy, I snatch them. I become the geeter. Now, what makes sense to rhyme? Like, he's the ace from outer space, Jocko. What makes sense with the geeter? Geeter, meter, cedar. Now, oh, when I'm a kid, hanging out in the wintertime on a corner, you're freezing out in the corner. Your buddy comes by. We all jump in his car. We say to the guy driving, hey, put your heater up. After 10 minutes, it becomes so hot in that car because he has it full blast. We say to the guy, it's hot in here. Turn it down. The parents are yelling to the kids in the background, turn that guy down. I became the geeter with the heater, heater being older. Rest together, please, sang a wop, bop, a do, bop. How do you do? Bonk a chink, chonk a chink, bop. That's how it was.
That's
alligator,
great.
Heater. And it just stuck.
Oh, it sure, to this day, the geeter with the heater is probably more well-known than even the name Jerry Blabbitt.
That's the problem.
No, it isn't at all. And I can't believe we're almost coming to the end of the hour, so I got to ask. Today, of course, you are still on the radio, really 7 days a week?
Well, we're on actually 7 days a week. And you know the wonderful thing which you've created? There's a thing called the Internet, right?
Mm-hmm, yes.
And we're on a wonderful station that streams all over the world called XPN, WXPN, which is 88.5, you know, every Saturday from 6 o'clock to 7 o'clock. And then we're on Monday through Friday on Cruisin' 92.1. And then we're on Oldies 94.3 out of Wildwood. And that's on the Internet. We're there every night from 7 to 9. And then we're on Atlantic City from Memories in Margate. And then we do PBS. And then we do QBC. By the way, you know, I'm on SpongeBob.
I've heard about this. Yes, yes. You and when will that episode air? When will this come out?
Let me tell you what happened. You know, the guy who's SpongeBob is a big fan. His name is Kenny, okay? And he loves the geeter. So I get a call from Andy Paley, and Andy says, look, Nickelodeon, we're going to be doing an album. SpongeBob's doing an album. We would like you to be the disc jockey who plays the tunes, but you'll be a tuna. You will be the boss with the tuna tartar sauce playing tunes for the guys living in the dunes, Bikini Bottom. So my name is Al Bacori, the tuneful tuna, the boss with the tartar sauce. So that is, I already cut that.
Oh, that's great.
Ryan Wilson's a part of that. You remember Nino Tempo?
Sure, of course.
You know, these are some of the characters. And
that's
if
great.
This thing, it comes out in the fall.
Okay.
And so I'll be a little guy playing tunes for everybody in the dunes, Bikini Bottom.
Oh, this is so good. This is so good.
Yeah.
And, of course, I will update geetergold.net so everybody can check that out. You'll give me the information on when it's running. And, of course, people who are at Atlantic City this summer, what is it, like 30 years now at Memories at Margate?
34 years,
wow.
Memories in Margate, and the wonderful thing is that people of all ages come and just have a ball. See, it's pure, Raleigh. You see, you get it. The audience gets it. The public gets it. I only wish that radio would get the fact that the most important thing is that word called communicating. You communicate, and you are important because your audience communicates with you on subjects. In the early days, I communicated, as I do today, with my music.
Sure.
Music is endless, timeless. If you have a heart, if you have a soul, if it reaches your ear, then it has hit the spot that it's supposed to hit.
Oh, absolutely. And as the phrase you say so often, from the heart, not from a record chart,
absolutely.
it just sums it. An amazing career. And I'm so thrilled it's on the Internet. I'll have to get links for that on my site so everybody can hear the geeter with the heater, the boss with the hot sauce. And, Jerry, I can't believe it's the fastest hour I've ever done in radio. So we will do this again.
Raleigh, let me say this again before you leave. You are very special, not only to me, because I go back with you. You have a great history. And I know the pain for you to survive as you've survived. I've shared that same pain. But the reward is knowing that your audience out there loves you. And I want you to know that you are a very special human being.
Well, and that goes likewise, Jerry. There are very few people left keeping it alive. And certainly in this area of the country, I can't think of another person on the air who is keeping our music and memories alive and current. So thank you for that.
And remember, Raleigh, you got to keep on rocking.
Because you only rock once.
Love you.
All right. Thank you, Jerry. Jerry Blabbitt, the boss with the hot sauce, the geeter with the heater. Yes, and Geator Gold, GEATORGOLD.NET, and I promise to update with that with the latest and the greatest. SpongeBob, that's terrific. But, you know, Jerry over the years has been an absolute testament to what, you know, the courage of will do for you. Because so many times in Jerry's career, there were more people saying won't. And Jerry persevered and remained at a time when everybody else is but a footnote and forgotten. So we will continue with trivia next and more Jerry Blabbitt in the future right here on the Raleigh James Show.
The Raleigh James Show.